Okay, good evening, and tonight is the final two parashiot in Sefer Vayikra. We read them together as Bahar and Bechukotai. Each of them by themselves is quite a nice short parasha. And even together, it's not incredibly long. I think our main focus tonight will be on some themes in Parashat Bahar, but we'll hopefully cross over the divide into Bechukotai as well. So let's start at the very beginning. Vayidaber Adonai Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemor. Hashem spoke to Moshe on Har Sinai, saying, Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'amarta alehem, speak to Bnei Yisrael and say to them, Ki tavo el ha'aretz, when you come to the land, asher ani notein lachem, that I give to you, v'shavata ha'aretz shabbat l'Adonai, the land shall cease working as a Sabbath for Hashem. And this, of course, is the mitzvah of Shemitah. Rashi asks a very famous question. It's not really Rashi's question, it's from the Midrash Halacha. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe b'har Sinai, ma inyan Shemitah le'inyan har Sinai. What on earth has Shemitah got to do with har Sinai? That's, why are you telling me that this mitzvah was given on har Sinai? That's, what's special about the mitzvah of Shemitah that it was, we have to be told it was given on har Sinai? V'alo kol ha'mitzvot t'ne'emru mi'Sinai. Weren't all the mitzvot in the Torah told to Moshe Rabbeinu on har Sinai? So just with the Shemitah, all the details are given on Har Sinai, meaning that the details of the mitzvah of Shemitah aren't repeated later on in Sefer Devarim, but all the details are mentioned the first time round. It's teaching us that all the mitzvot of the Torah, all the details were given at Har Sinai. That's how the Medrash Halacha in Torah Konim teaches it. So what Rashi is telling us is that the Torah was told to the people on more than one occasion. It was told to the people at Har Sinai. It was also told to the people by Arvot Moav, just before they went into Eretz Yisrael. Now, in many instances, we find details of the mitzvot appear in Sefer Devarim that don't appear in Sefer Shemot Vayikra Bamidbar. So if that's the case, I might have thought that those details were added later, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them to Moshe at the end of the 40 years, and they weren't told to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai. So we're being told with Shemitah that the Shemitah, everything was given on Har Sinai. This mitzvah is only taught in connection of Har Sinai, and all the details appear there. So all the mitzvot in the Torah, also the details were all given at Har Sinai, even though they weren't necessarily recorded in that context. And this expression, Ma'inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai, that's has become sort of, you know, it's what's this got to do with the price of cheese? That's essentially what it means. And, you know, in the yeshivot or whatever it is, even in modern Israel, that's modern Hebrew, you know, you'll use that expression. You know, what's this got to do with anything? You'll say, you know, Ma'inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai, why are you telling me, why are you telling me this? That's, though my wife told me that one of her teachers always used to say that's a silly thing to say, because that's, Rashi tells us there is Inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai. That's, there is a reason why it's like that. So it's a good question, but there's an answer to my Inyan Shemitah etzel Har Sinai. Now, a question that has puzzled me for many, many years on this Rashi is, okay, this is very, very helpful, and it's telling us why it says Bahar Sinai Lemor in the context of Shemitah. But why is it, out of all of the Taryag mitzvot, that this mitzvah in particular is chosen to be the one that is our model of a mitzvah that was given at Har Sinai, as with all its details? Why specifically Shemitah? Take another mitzvah and tell us that all its details were given at Har Sinai, and that we could learn from that that all mitzvot follow the same model. That's a question that's bothered me for some time. And the Chatam Sofer seems to address it in his commentary, or his comments, Torah Moshe. So he quotes Rashi and refers us to Ramban. Nirali, at the end of the first line, Nirali ta shmita mevuav nigla le'enei kol. So there's something special about the Shemitah year. Shemitah is an exceptional mitzvah. It's clear to everybody that the mitzvah itself and all the details and all the rabbinic laws that apply, gon isor hasafichim, that's the prohibition against eating just sort of stuff that's sprouted by itself, Hakol Mitzinai, that everything originates from Har Sinai. There's something special about the mitzvah Shemitah. We can tell that everything is associated, was given at Har Sinai. Shaharei hayaro'e lahedya sheba'erev shvi'it tzivah HaKadosh Baruch Hu birchato l'shalosh hashanim. Because we find in this week's parasha that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that in the sixth year, he's going to bless the produce for 3 years. He's going to bless it for the sixth year. There'll be enough to eat in the sixth year and the seventh year. And in the eighth year, till you're able to harvest the produce of the eighth year. Same way that the man in the midbar, that's on a Friday, it provided enough food for 2 days. So the year before the Sabbath of the land, just the day before the Sabbath of the world, provides extra food. The year before the Sabbath of the land also provides extra food. It's because Hashem has given you Shabbat that he gives you a double portion on Friday. So likewise in the seventh year, we've got a clear proof that it was given at Sinai, but Masha b'chol pam nitbarich shana shishit al shalosh shanim, that every time the Shemitah year comes round, there's blessing for 3 years. Misham yitku raya l'chol ha-mitzvot, and therefore you can take a proof from that, from all mitzvot, ki ha-chelek ya'ed al ha-kol, because one instance will give us a model for everything else. Ha'inu k'shem sheshmita klaloteha fratoteha v'diktu keha misinai v'chulei, just as all the details of the Shemitah year originate at Sinai, so likewise everything originates at Sinai. What the Chatam Sofer is telling us is that Shemitah is essentially an incontroversial, is that the word? Incontroversial? That's no such word as that. Yes, that's a mitzvah that you can't cast any doubts on, because we don't want to cast doubts on any of the mitzvot. But you take a mitzvah, I don't know, the mitzvah shatnas, right? So the mitzvah shatnas, we're told, yes, you've got to keep it. And we believe we got to keep him. We believe Hashem gave it to us. But there's nothing, there's no proof. There's nothing to endorse or show us the proof of that mitzvah. Unequivocal. Okay, that's a good word. Thank you. That's with Shemitah, if we're promised a bracha for 3 years, and that happens every time, then that's proof that this mitzvah is a true mitzvah. And then we can use that as a model for everything else. That's, you know, a mitzvah that was made up by somebody. You could never incorporate in it such a promise. So that's the answer of the Chatam Sofer, and why Shemitah is such a good example. That's to be a model for everything else. In terms of Shemitah, is uncontestably a mitzvah from Sinai. That's, whereas the other mitzvot, we wouldn't contest them, but other people might. Now, there's much discussion about what the reason is for the mitzvah of Shemitah.
I think that way around.
Go on.
If it was absolutely no question, you wouldn't even say it's given to Har Sinai. It's one that people may be able to question, and you'd say, no, that was given to Har Sinai.
No, I think what we want to show is that all the details were given at Har Sinai. I want to take a mitzvah that which has many details to it, and it's not going to be repeated some other place. And I'll just saying that it was given at Har Sinai isn't good enough in terms of there's got to be something backing that up, and that's the point the Chatam Sofer is making. The fact that there's the promise that's backing it up. No, I don't think so. No, it's just with Tzedakah. Yeah. Now, there is, as I think we've touched on previous occasions, lots of discussion about what the reason is for the mitzvah of Shemitah. Some suggest it's for agricultural reasons. Some suggest it's to parallel the notion of the 7 days of the week and to remind us of Maaseh Bereishit. Let's see what the Kli Yakar says and how he explains this this mitzvah. So to deal with some of the details in the parasha, Omer ani, I would say, Shita mitzvah zuhi, what's the reason for this mitzvah? Lahashrish et Yisrael b'midat ha'emuna. It's to force us to believe and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'abitachon b'Hashem. Ki chashash HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was worried, pen bevo amel ha'aretz, that when the Jewish people came into the land of Israel, yitasku b'avodat ha'adama l'amin ha'kativi, they would work the land in the normal way, the chasher kavir matzah yadam, and when they find that they're being successful, yishkechu et Hashem, so they would forget Hashem, v'yasru bitkonam imenu, and stop having confidence in him, v'yachshvu ki chocham v'otzem yadam, asa lahem et and they'll think that it's their own strength and power that's achieved this for them. And just that the world, yeah, this is the way the world functions. And they'll believe that the land really belongs to them. And that they own it and they're in charge of it. And it produces food because they want it to produce food. And if they don't want it to produce food, they don't work and it won't produce food. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed them from the normal way that the world would operate. The usual agricultural cycle was that you sow the land, you rotate your fields. And each field you use for 2 years and let it lie fallow for 1 year. So that you don't weaken it. But Hashem said, Sheshanim tizra sadecha. No, you can sow it for 6 years, don't worry. Midei shana b'shana, every year you can sow it for 6 years. V'ani mavtichacha lehosif kocha shelo takish. I promise you it'll actually become stronger rather than weaker over this period of time. V'ot neis b'toch neis. There's a miracle within a miracle. Sha'achar she'zarata sheish shanim. Once you've sown it for 6 years, im b'shana ha'shishit lo yakish chila'a. I understand that it might not be weaker in the sixth year. Hinei lo kol ha'pachot lo yosef la'at zekach. You wouldn't expect it to be any stronger. V'omer Hashem, but Hashem says, Adraba, on the contrary, Shebashana Hashishit Yosef la Koach Kokach. The sixth year, it will be so much more powerful, the land, Ad Shenemar V'tziviti et Birkati B'shana Hashishit, until we're told that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will command his blessing on the fields in the sixth year, V'asata Tetavua L'shlosh HaShanim, and they'll produce produce for 3 years, as we mentioned just previously. And if the miracle was just that the fields will produce produce for 3 years, that would be miraculous in itself. But in addition to all that, the produce that is grown in the sixth year, even if it's in terms of quantity, it's only enough for 1 year. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give a blessing to the produce. The person will be able to eat just a small amount and it'll keep him full for a long time. So that the produce will be enough for 3 year period. So it will not, even if it's not quantitatively superior, it will be qualitatively superior. It says, Hatavua. It should just say, it will produce It will produce produce, but it doesn't have to say ha-tavuah, which implies that it's a particular type of tavuah that we're talking about. So, okay, we don't need to continue exactly what he says here, but the point that he's making is very clear, is that the mitzvah of Shemitah is convincing us that Hashem is in charge of the land. He's telling us, take a risk, okay? Instead of you having the usual three-year cycles, you can have a six-year cycle. That's number one. So we're showing confidence in Hashem. And there, in the sixth year, he's providing us either with an exceptionally large crop or at least an exceptionally powerful crop. That's what he's providing us with. And that gives us emunah in Hashem. So we're demonstrating bitachon and emunah. The bitachon is that we carry on working the field for 6 years and we don't, we're not worried that we maybe need to have a three-year cycle. And the emunah is that when we see that we're blessed in the sixth year with an exceptional crop, then we have belief in Hashem's powers. So according to the Kli Yakar, that the purpose of the mitzvah of Shemitah is to strengthen our trust and belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, the immediately next mitzvah after Shemitah is the mitzvah of Yovel. And part of the mitzvah of Yovel is the mitzvah of Tkiat Shofar. We translate it as you should sound the shofar trua in the seventh month on the tenth of the month. On Yom Kippur, you will sound the shofar throughout all your lands. That's we often think, because you know we blow the shofar on Yom Kippur at the very end of Yom Kippur, so we think that in Shemitah year that's what it'll be a tekiya gadola. In Yovel, yeah. It'll be a Tekiat Gedolah on Yom Kippur of Yovel. In actual fact, the mitzvah of Tekiat Shofar on Yom Kippur of Yovel will be exactly the same as the mitzvah of Tekiat Shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So, you know, you blow however many notes you blow on Rosh Hashanah in the repetition of the Amidah in Musaf. That's the way that it was done in the times of the Beit HaMikdash. Yeah, well, the 100 is a minhag from recent generations, but the 30, I mean, really, you know, Midor writing, it's the 9 blasts. That's what would be blown as part of the Musaf, Tefillah. Now, one of the questions is, why blow a shofar teruah? Why particularly to blow the shofar, and particularly, especially, why are we mentioning that it has to be a teruah sound? I might have thought that, you know, that tekiya gadola would be appropriate. That's especially if you think, where else do we have a tekiya gadola in Chumash? I don't know if it's a tekiya gadola there. That's on Har Sinai. Bimshochei Ovel, Hema Yalu Bahar. That's when there's this big, long blast of the shofar at after Matan Torah. That's a sign they can go back up the mountain. So it's sort of, everything's coming to an end. A big tekiya gadola. That's whereas here we're seeing that it's actually shofar teruah, specifically a teruah, which is, of course, the sound that we have on Rosh Hashanah as well. I spoke a little bit on last Friday night about the teruah sound on Rosh Hashanah. Let's see what Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg says in context of the teruah for Yovel year. Perush teruah. What does it mean? What does the word teruah mean? So he brings us an example that's from Sefer Tehillim. Sefer Tehillim, Perek Bet. Teroeim b'shevet barzel. Okay, where David HaMelech says that you will break the enemy, you'll break them, teroeim b'shevet barzel, with an iron rod. So the word teruah is related to a word which means something to break something, which of course teruah is a broken note. So that we usually talk about the shvarim as being a broken note, shever. That's but here we're saying that the teruah is also a broken note. Uvaze shem shofar nishmach al shem teruah karaui, and it makes sense here that the word shofar is juxtaposed to it, shofar teruah. As I don't know his German, v'hu nachon ma'od lefi ha'inyan, and this fits in very well contextually. Ha'avadim niftaru levateihem levetam, the servants go free, slaves go free. Ki nishbar ol shibud ha'adon me'alehem, the yoke of slavery from their masters has been broken. V'chein hasadot, that's and also the fields. They are released, their relationship with their owners, their current owners, is broken. So the first thing that HaKetav HaKabbalah is saying is the term teruah means to break something, and certain bonds are broken, that's in the Yovel year. That's whoever's, literally, got his servant in chains, or ropes or whatever it is, those ropes and chains are broken in the Yovel year. That's the first interpretation of teruah. He gives a second one. Veshalufaresh, we could explain. Shem teruah min teruat melech bo. Okay, in Parashat Vezot Habracha, teruat melech, the friendship of the king. Vayar panapit teruah. Sheperush inyan reyut v'chevra. In those contexts, the term teruah means affection. That's and sense of community. Kishnat Yovel hishnat shel cheirut, because the Yovel year is a year of freedom, and kriyat d'ror l'chol yosvei ha'aretz, and proclaiming liberty to everybody who lives there. Shana shel simcha la'ashirim v'la'aniyim, that's, it's a year of simcha both for the wealthy and the poor. Le'ba'alei achuza v'la'avadim, for people who own property and those who are slaves. There's no, you can't work your fields, you don't sow or harvest or anything like that. Everybody will just be equal and friendly. So what he's saying is that the word shofar teruah, he would translate it, I don't know exactly, well, he's got something there in German, I can't read that, but what he's suggesting really is shofar teruah means a shofar of friendship, because a fraternity maybe is better translation. That's because when the Shemitah year comes, everybody, the tiers of society, sorry, the Yovel year, when the Yovel year comes, the tiers of society disintegrate and everybody is level. That's so it's an interesting notion, because of course that's I understand the poor people and the slaves being very happy come the Shemitah year, the Yovel year, but why is the master feeling happy about it? So I can think of a couple of possible suggestions. One is that, owning a slave should have a certain sense of unease. I have a feeling we've seen this idea in previous years. I can't remember where from. I have a sense that this isn't my own idea. You own a slave, that's there's a certain moral stain on your soul. That's that you're depriving somebody else of their liberty. That's and so when the shofar teruah sounded in the 50th year, you're sorry to see your slave go. That's, but you've known about it for a while. The Yovel year never creeps up on anybody unexpected. That's and your conscience is cleared. That's you don't feel bad about depriving somebody else of their liberty. So that's possibly one answer, that it's descriptive of how the landowner would feel. The other possibility is that it's prescriptive. It's telling us how you ought to feel. You ought to feel happy for other people that the hierarchies have been broken down, and that they've got the same freedoms that you've got. Even if you don't automatically feel that, maybe that's the way you should be feeling. It's saying that everybody's equal. It's true that the poor people will feel happier about things than the wealthy people. That's the wealthy people who've lost their slaves. But part of it is that you stay friends with everybody. Okay. If we look further on in this first parak of the parasha, we find two mitzvot which are very similar and which are worth spending a little bit of time on. The first is in Pasuk Yud-Dalad. V'chitim karumim kala mitecha o'kano miyada mitecha. When you sell or buy something, al tonu ishet achiv. A person must not oppress his brother. No, that was Oshek. That was a different halacha this morning. But I'm glad somebody was listening. That's Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'lo tonu ishet amito. We've got almost exactly the same. Instead of al tonu, here it's v'lo tonu. Instead of ishet achiv, it's ishet amito. But again, mitzvah not to oppress. V'yareita me'elohecha, you shall fear your God. Ki ani Adonai Eloheichem, for I am Hashem, your God. So we've got two mitzvot here, which seem virtually the same. What's the difference between the two? Basing himself on the Mishnah and the Gemara in Masechet Bava Metzia, Rashi tells us that Al Tonu, in the first Pasuk, Zu Onat Mamon. This is talking about oppression through price. Now, it's a tricky one to understand in the modern context of prices. But essentially, there's a din. You're not allowed to overcharge a person. So you're not allowed to charge a person more than what something is worth. And there's a halakha, if you overcharge them more than one-sixth, then the sale is null and void. It's kind of a little bit difficult to understand from a modern perspective in terms of if you've got a market economy, then, you know, whatever people pay is presumably what something is worth. But I guess, if I go and sell cans of Coke outside Wimbledon on a hot day like today, I probably won't have much business because there's nothing much going on today at Wimbledon. But if it's beautiful summer's day and I go to somewhere and a bank holiday Monday, I stand by the beach in Bournemouth with cans of Coke and sell them for £1.50 each. If I've got people who are willing to buy them, then presumably I'm not overcharging them. That's what it's worth to those people. So I think the best example of ona'a would be where I'm selling something to somebody unsuspecting, and they're asking me, what's this, the cost, the price of this? So, for example, I buy a bottle of whiskey, right, for £25, and somebody who knows nothing about whiskey comes up to me and says, oh, I hear you've got, a couple of bottles of whiskey you're trying to sell. I want to buy one for my brother-in-law for his birthday. So I said, I've got this very nice bottle of Glenmorangie. It's £50. She says, is that a good deal? So it's a wonderful deal. Right. So it's not that it's worth £50 to her. She doesn't know what she's getting. She's never bought a bottle of whiskey in her life. Somebody told me somebody tells her it's £50. It's not worth £50. It's worth, it's worth £25. It might be that if at the Alation whiskey tasting evening, we could auction it for whatever we auction it for, that would be a different matter. That would be what its true value is. That's what people who are aware of what it is want to pay for it. So the issue of onah does, you know, does apply, but I don't think it applies to, you know, to normal markups. You know, if it's an open market, then, you know, the right price is, you know, what people will pay for, you know, for what I'm selling. I suppose the case can be, you know, if it's not an open market, that might be the case. So the first mitzvah, al tonu eshet achiv, it's saying you can't take financial advantage of people. And that's important. You're selling a second-hand car or something like that, that you can't take financial advantage of people. V'lo tonu eshet amito, you mustn't oppress your fellow. Kan hithir al onat dvarim, here it's talking about verbal oppression. Shelo yaknit et chaveiro, I say you shouldn't aggravate your friend. V'lo yasyenu et sasheino hogenet, don't give him bad advice. You have to advise a person according to their particular circumstances. So you might say, you know, I tell a person to do something, not to do something, whatever. Who knows if I had his best interest at heart or not? You don't know what I thought. So it says in the Pasuk, oh, but you need to fear Hashem. You might not fear that person, but you need to fear Hashem. Hayodea machashavot, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows what a person's thinking. HaKodavah HaMasul Alev Shein Makir Bo, anything which is that an internal matter that other people don't know what's going on. Ela Misha Machshavah B'Libo, only you, because you know what's in your heart. That's why it says you should fear Hashem, because he can see into your heart. Let's look at the Sforno's drasha there also on the Lotonu. So you mustn't oppress a person even verbally. Ugenevat dat, so he's introducing for us, this is very important, the notion of genevat dat, misleading a person, veit sotra, some bad advice. Hafilu biltishum drarad mamona, even if it's got no financial implications. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem, for I am Hashem your God, Elokea konev, Elokea mocheh, the God of the purchaser, the God of the seller, umakpid ani alonat konechat mehem, and I care about the oppression of anybody. So let's look in the Rambam and see some examples of how this manifests itself. So in Perek Yud Dalet of Hilchot Mechira, Halacha Yud Dalet, the Rambam says, and he's basing himself on the sugya in Masechet Bava Metzia, K'shem Shahonaya B'mekach U'Mimkar, just as there's a prohibition against oppressing a person financially in business, that's in buying and selling, there's also a notion of onaa, of oppression, verbal oppression. So exactly what Rashi told us. Ketzad. So let's see some examples. So the Rambam tells us, haya bal teshuva, if a person was a bal teshuva, lo yomar lo, you don't say to him, zechor ma'asech harishonim, ah, remember what you used to do. Don't sit, you know, in shul, you know, and while they're putting the Sefer Torah away, and he looks at his watch and he says, well, listen, yeah, and no wonder you're itching to get out of here. You used to go every Shabbos to the football. You must find this really boring. Something like that. That would be a way of making him feel bad. Vim hayah ben gerim, or if a person was the child of converts, loyal marlo, don't say to him, zechor ma'aseh avotecha, remember what your parents used to do. So don't say, oh yes, well, you know, I'm glad you liked the cholent at the kiddush, your parents used to eat, haggis. On Saturdays. Hayah ger uva l'mod Torah, if he's a ger and he's coming to learn Torah, lo yomar lo, don't say, oh, peshach on the velot, a treifot, yavov l'mod Torah. Oh, I see that the mouth that used to eat pig's trotters has come to learn Torah. Sheni yesh, sheni t'nami piagvura, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave. Hayuchalaim v'isurim ba'in alav, or if a person was suffering, he was ill and suffering, or shayam mekaveret banav, or a person was burying his children, lo yomar lo kederch she'amru chavei rav li'iyov, don't be a Job's comforter and say halo yiratcha kisiltacha, that your fear of Hashem is just foolishness, zechorna mihu naki avad, that's and think who, you know, you're an innocent person who's, you know, losing something for nothing. Zechor na mihu naki avad. Is there an innocent person who loses their things? You know, you must be a sinner. Have sensitivity to people's feelings. Hayu chamarim mevakshin tavua. Or if you've got ass drivers who are looking for produce to feed to their asses, lo yomar lahem, don't say to them lechu etzel ploni, go to the kosher kingdom, v'hu yodeh shelo machar tvua me'olam, and you can get pretty much everything in kosher kingdom, but you can't get horse feed. Nishala shela dvar chochma, or if a person asks you, you know, a question about science or whatever it is, lo yomar lemishenu yodea ota chochma, don't turn to the person who knows nothing about it and say to them, ma tashiv b'davar zeh, well, what would you say about this? Ma datcha b'davar zeh, what's your thoughts? Chen kako yotzei b'dvarim halalu, and likewise with all these sorts of things. So, in its most extreme sense, the mitzvah of onat dvarim is what we would call nowadays verbal abuse. You're not allowed to be rude and insulting and put down a person and make them feel stupid. Many of these are examples of, you know, making a person feel stupid, or making a person feel embarrassed. That's as we saw in the Sforno, there's also this notion of Gnevat Dat, and this also comes up in the Halacha. I think it can be a very difficult issue, certainly in business, that, you know, Gnevat Dat. I mean, a classic example would be, you know, you're selling your car, so the Mishnah in Bava Metzia talks about, you know, dressing up produce. You know, if you've got, let's say you're selling a horse, the Mishnah talks about a horse or a para, whatever. So if you give it something to drink, you know, cold drink now, it'll make it seem shinier fur or whatever it is, shinier hair. But that's, you know, it's a clapped out old horse. But you're dressing it up to make it look better. Or talks about, you know, if you're selling a sack of produce, you can't put the best produce on the top, so it looks like, oh, you know, there's no chaff or rubbish there. Whereas, you know, if you go down under the top layer, you know, it's full of rubbish there. That's a problem of Gnevat Dat. If you've got a car, so you're selling your car, and, you know, there's a big dent somewhere. So you the whole time you stand by the big dent, and you don't tell the person. So that would be an issue of Gnevat Dat. But, you know, even in, you know, other cases, you buy a packet of crisps. Some of these packets of crisps, you know, there's so much air in them. I'd say it could be an issue of Gnevat Dat. You know, a person thinks they're getting, you know, more than they are getting. That's a big question I've got, is with CVs. Yeah, a person's writing their CV. That's got big issues there, I think, of onat dvarim and gnevat dat. That's, you know, how you present yourself in a CV. I don't know, if I was writing my CV, would I say, you know, do I have to write? I give a fairly boring parsha shir on Tuesday nights. Or am I allowed to, you know, say that, you know, I give dynamic, you know, parasha shiurim, plumbing the depths of the commentators. you know, there's got to be, you know, it's easy to try and advertising, CVs, those sorts of things, to try and bend the truth when, you know, that's not necessarily the case. So, you know, something to flag up in that context. Sorry?
They should look for.
Yes, exactly.
Wonderful personality, very
nice. Yeah, that's...
Well, that.
Yes, that's right. That might, I suppose, for a person who knows how to read between the lines, you know, it's all right. It's like, you know, the person who asks his boss for a letter of recommendation. So the boss, you know, Tom Smith has come to, you know, ask me for a letter of recommendation. He left this company as he joined it, fired with enthusiasm. You know, so people who understand these things, yes, I suppose if I was
be glad to see her back.
Right. Very good. I suppose, you know, if I was writing a CV, right? So, you know, I could put down my, you know, current position, senior rabbi of Halei Tzion. I am the senior rabbi of Halei Tzion. There's no junior rabbi, and we're a fairly small community. Senior rabbi, you know, makes it sound like, you know, some enormous American synagogue with, you know, 2,000 families and 6 members of the clergy staff and, you know, such things. So, you know, it depends, who you're presenting it to. But these could be issues of Gnevat Daat.
Well, the bigger problem is when somebody asks you about something which you're interested in. So you're looking at that car.
Right.
Somebody asks, what do you think of that car? You want it. So.
Right. Well, it would seem that you're not allowed to mislead them. You can't say to them, oh, you know, I think it's... Sorry?
You better off keeping quiet.
Yeah, you might... Yeah, I think you could say, I don't want to say anything. No views on the matter. That's... whenever I say no views on the matter... People know that I've got very clear views on the matter. I just don't want to share them. Yeah. So they understand I've got something to say, but I'm not going to say it. But yeah, we have to realize that sometimes, yeah, we're going to not get what we would personally want to get, but we're abiding by the halakha. We're not allowed to mislead the next person. That's the critical thing. Let's look on a little bit. If your brother becomes poor, at umata yadoimach, and his hand is cast down with you, so you shall strengthen him, gevatoshav, whether it's a ger or a toshav, vachaimach, and he will live with you. There's an important Rashi here and an important Ramban. Let's look at Rashi, vechezaktabo. You shall support him. Al tadichenu sheyered vipol. Don't let him fall. Vihei kashel hakimol, because then it would be difficult to pull him up again. And achaskehu mishat matot hayad. That's but strengthen him from as soon as he puts out his hand for support. Lemaze domeh. What could we compare this to? Lebatsui shal hakamor. If you've got a burden. Load on a donkey, or deubim komo, or if it's still on the back of the donkey, echad to facebo mamido, you just need to hold on to it, and it'll stay there. Nafal la'aretz, but if it falls onto the ground, chamisha in mamidin oto, you can't get 5 people, you know, it'll take 5 people to slap it up. That's, so Rashi understands, hechazak dabo, that is, you need to support him while he's still standing to prevent him from falling. Look at the Ramban. The Ramban says, "Tam v'chayach ichaimach." So we've got this din of v'chayach ichaimach, which is in the I think the following pasuk. That's sheyichye imach. He will live with you. V'hi mitzvah tasei. So this is a positive mitzvah. V'chayoto. To keep a person alive, Shemimena nitztavinu apikuach nefesh b'mitzvah taseh. So from here, we find there's a positive mitzvah of pikuach nefesh. Right? We've encountered pikuach nefesh before. I spoke about it in Shul on Shabbat a couple of weeks ago. There it was in terms of how do we know that pikuach nefesh supersedes Shabbat. Here we're seeing the makor for pikuach nefesh. V'chayachichaimach. That your brother should live with you. You can't just live life by yourself. You've got to do pikuach nefesh for others. Umikan amru, v'chayachicha imash. So this is a mama chazal. Zudaras ben potire, shnaim shayu mahalchim b'derech. It's famous Gemara. Now it's got two people on a journey together through the desert. V'yad echad mehem kiton shel mayim. One of them's got a flask of water. Im shotehu magia liyishuv. If he drinks the flask of water, he'll be able to reach civilization and get more water. Vim shneim shotim. But if both of them drink the water, shneim matim. Both of them will die. So Darash Ben Potiri said, mutav yishtu shneihem v'yamutu. It's best they should both drink the water and die. V'lo yirechad b'mitato shel chaveiro. Can't have a situation where one person sees the other person dying. Ad sheba Rabbi Akiva v'li made, but Rabbi Akiva came along and said, no, v'chei achicha imach, your brother shall live with you. Chayecha kozmin v'chayecha vercha. Meaning if you can live, then you need to make your brother live as well. But if you can't, then you don't need to make him live. This is an important principle that Rabbi Akiva is establishing. Yes, pikuach nefesh is important, but not at the expense of your own life. That's it can't come at the expense of your own life. It's just to look back at the Rashi ve'chazak tabor, al tenichenu she'ered v'yipol would seem to indicate that there is a mitzvah to help people who are in difficult circumstances. There's a mitzvah of the hechazak tabor. You have to support them. Sometimes, you know, there's a sense one can have, oh, it's not my geschäft, not my problem. This is telling us that, actual fact, it very often is your problem, even though it seems to be somebody else's problem. So you've got your poor person and you want to help them. So you think, oh, I'll lend them money. You know, this will work well for both of us. I'll lend him £10,000. He'll pay me interest. He's got money he can use. And I get the interest. Al tikach meitor neshech v'tarbit. You can't take any type of interest from them. Yareita melokach. Again, you shall fear your God. V'chei achicha imach. Now, what's the reason for the prohibition against taking interest? So the Ra'ubag says as follows. Im shezah ha'inyan yekneh ha'at la'adam t'chunot m'gunot. As if you lend money with interest, it turns you into being a bad person. L'rov ha'ishtadlut ba'asifat ha'mamon. That's basically you're going to be always trying to get more money. Ad shekvayit ha'kem tamid l'hamtzim ma'ot l'mi she'ireh she'yuchal ha'aviyach imoh. That's whenever you see anybody who, you know, might want to borrow money from you, you'll always be, oh, you know, let's see if I can lend him money. That's mitzad chesron da'atov ribui kinyanav. And the person will want to borrow it, either because he thinks, you know, it's a clever thing to do. Ah, look, I can get, you know, I can double my income by borrowing money. Or he's just got, you know, he needs to buy lots of things and he needs the money. You're taking advantage of him. And you're always going to try to, you know, get people to borrow from you so that you can make a profit. And that's bad midot. So that's what the Ralbag says. Let's finish the shir by, we're not going to get into the next parasha. So we'll have only done Bahar this week. So, means we need to follow along in the laning for Bukhukotai. That let's look at what Rav Hirsch says. Rav Hirsch makes an interesting observation about the issue of ribbit. He says it can't be that it's something to do with morality. It can't be immoral to lend money with ribbit. If it was immoral, he says, first of all, then it would be also to lend with ribbit to a non-Jew. And second of all, he says, it's like money's not really any different. Nobody says I'm not allowed to rent out, you know, my car to somebody. Somebody needs a car. I don't have to lend it to them for nothing. I can, you know, rent it out to them. So with money, it would seem to be, you know, what's interest? Interest is I lend a person £100. I rent them £100 and they give me back £110. Where does the difference lie? So let's look at Rav Hirsch. He says, from the Jewish point of view, our money is not absolutely our own property. It's only conditionally ours. God has the real right of disposal of it, and he has made it our duty to place some of his property that happens to be in our hands into the hand of our brother, not only to provide the necessities for his life, but also for the upkeep and continuation of his business. Against this duty to pay us back a similar sum in a certain time, the money which up until then had been ours at God's behest, at the moment of transition becomes his. It's not with our money, it's with his own that he does business. The profit made is the product of his activity with his own money, and consequently exclusively his. If we demand any part of it, we're demanding a neshech, a bite at his fortune, and at the same time, in any case, tarbit is an increase, an addition to our fortune, not compensation for anything that we might have been able to earn with the money loaned. For we had no right to keep it back for our own use, as God, the real owner of all property, had placed it at the disposal of somebody else. So that even if the debtor had been able to make a profit out of the loan, the interest paid would still be neshech and tarbit. What he's saying is, by having an issa against the ribbit, it's telling us that the money that we've got isn't really ours. Now, you could do that with anything. You could do that with everything. You could say with property as well. I suppose what Rav Hirsch is saying, you know, the world does need to function. And, you know, a way of making the world function is that, you know, some people buy things and then lend them out as a profit to the next person. But with money itself, it's important to impress upon us that money isn't really ours. It's given to us for safekeeping, and we can use it. But when somebody else takes it, if we give it to somebody else, it's actually theirs. Just as it was ours, it's now theirs. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given me £10,000. I've got the £10,000 to lend to other people. It's not my money to lend. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's money, and therefore I don't have a right to it. That, of course, is a message to us about everything throughout life. Now, what we'll finish off, just to finish with something, final point on the first of the parashiyot, there is a prohibition against making a matseva. A matseva, not a tombstone, matseva, but you're allowed to have a mizbeach. A mizbeach is made out of avanim, lots of stones built together. A matseva is one single stone. What's wrong with one single stone? Why can't you have an altar made out of one single stone? So Rav Moshe Feinstein, he explains that if it's a matseva made out of one single stone, that's very finite. That's it. There's nothing more you can do to it. It's built, it's made. An altar, you can always add to it. And that should be a lesson for us in terms of Avodat Hashem. That's Avodat Hashem, you should never be regarded as fine. I finished it. You never finished it. You can always add to it and make it into something bigger and something better. So that's Rav Moshe Feinstein there. Okay, I must write myself a note so that next time, Be'ezrat Hashem, when we get to Bahar or